Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. And 2022 Western Force memberships available now at westernforce.rugby.
Hello, welcome to Sports Day on this Wednesday night. Very warm around town, 7 after 6. Mark Reddings alongside Will Schofield. Big first hour of the show, shortly chatting with WACA CEO Christina Matthews. Another blow for cricket in not only Western Australia, but Australia, with the cancellation or postponement of the upcoming one-day series between Australia and New Zealand. Your time for the Wednesday wines, thanks to DM Breaker. West Coast Eagles captain Luke Shuey will have a chat to us as well. Plus, we'll cross live to Melbourne Park. The Australian Open continues tonight. Will Schofield, welcome to you, and a bit of sport to bump around tonight.
Yeah, there is, mate. We've got an action-packed show. I like some of the interviews we've got coming up tonight. We've been quietly just having a little look at the Big Bash going on as well. Record score on the card, Skeet. So the Melbourne Stars are currently absolutely on track to break every record in the book.
Yeah, Big Bash. 5 for 232 was the former record set by the Sydney Thunder in 2020-21. Well, the Melbourne Stars, bear in mind Glenn Maxwell scoring a century off 41 balls, the second fastest in Big Bash history, and he's opened the batting. Maybe that's a signal that that's where blokes like him should line up in the order, up the very top to face the most amount of balls.
What do you think about that? I mean, sometimes you've got guys, we can go as far back as Michael Bevan, the game savers, right? The guys that, Mike Hussey's, those sort of guys. Can they bat up the order and make more runs?
Well, that was more the 50-over format. Bevan, the finisher. Right. Hussey, the finisher. T20, you don't have that luxury. It's all about go from the opening over if possible, and that's exactly what the Stars have done here.
Well, and it's what Maxwell does. He's on 131 of 56 deliveries, the highest ever score by the man who's out there with him right now, Marcus Stoinis, 147.
So
he's on track, very much on track. There's a little bit to go in this game, so we'll keep you up to date with that.
There's a little bit to go with those two out in the middle as to who will have the record in the next maybe 5 to 10 minutes. They're in the 18th over, and Glenn Maxwell is absolutely smoking them. Another boundary to him. Let's quickly talk about, before we cross to Christina Matthews, about this one-day series. We knew in our heart of hearts that Optus Stadium was going to miss out at the end of this month because of our border restrictions, but now it looks like a real changing of the scenario for New Zealand, where their players and the quarantine going back to New Zealand was an issue. So that's been put on the back burner, and it looks like Cricket Australia has a bit of a hole
well,
in its agenda.
It does, and we're really looking forward to speaking to Christina about this in terms of what it does for WA cricket as well. It's not ideal, our border situations for sport. I understand why they're there, but this is a sports show first and foremost, and missing out on big games, an international between New Zealand and Australia, obviously missing out on the Ashes this year. It's not good for WA cricket. It's not good for WA cricket fans. It's not good for WA sports fans. If you take your COVID hat and just look at it from a sports perspective, we're missing out on a lot.
We've had a horror couple of seasons, let's be honest, because of border restrictions and all out of the control of the WACA. I've got a suggestion to perhaps fill the void, but we'll speak to Christina Matthews, the WACA CEO. It's a bit of a blast from the past, my idea, which has been stolen from somebody else, so it's not my original, but it is something that worked quite successfully in the early 1990s. But Christina Matthews is the CEO. She joins us now for a chat about cricket in general. Christina, thanks for taking our call.
No problem. Happy to be talking to you.
Yes, well, unfortunately, we've got you again off the back of another down time for cricket in this country, and particularly WA. The Perth ODI postponed. No real surprise. None of us expected it to go ahead simply because of our border situation. Did it come as a shock to you? I guess not.
Well, I mean, the fact that the whole series has been cancelled is a shock to me. But not having one here was something I expected.
What is the reason the entire series has been cancelled, Christina? Is it an Australian border problem? Is it New Zealand border problem?
It's to do with the New Zealand border. They can't be guaranteed. The New Zealand team can't guarantee that they'll be able to get back in because of their quarantine conditions that have just been put in place in New Zealand.
Now, the Australia-Sri Lanka T20 series has been shifted a bit as well. February 11 and 13 at the SCG, February 15 in Canberra, and February 18, 20, I think it says, MCG, which was planned. Did Perth or Optus Stadium try to get involved in that series late in the piece, Christina, or was it too late by then?
Oh, no, it was too late by then. One of the difficulties with all these series being separate They have MOUs with all the countries that have to be renegotiated if you change a venue. So we focused on trying to get an ODI and the border restrictions that came into play a little while ago prevented us from shifting from the 30th to the 5th of February because we couldn't get the team in ahead of the 5th of February, but we could actually play the game on the 5th of February. So it's very complex and difficult to manage. So by the time all that was sorted out, there was no time to do any negotiations around the T20.
Christina, do we and do West Australian cricket fans have anything to look forward to live here in WA? Is there something on the horizon that looks like it's going to get off the ground?
Well, we have next season. There's always next season. it's been pretty dismal couple of years under extraordinary conditions. But, we just keep plugging away. Hopefully there is an element of COVID being manageable come next summer and hopefully we'll resume normal programming.
Just seeing Glenn Maxwell reach the highest ever Big Bash total, 149 not out at the MCG. Christina, when it comes to...
Surprising when it doesn't matter.
Christina, a little shot across the bow.
While we're having a little speak on the scorches, we may as well tick this one off. Braden Stepien, the contract mistake which came during a very awkward time for the team. I think it was in Adelaide where you had injuries to Laurie Evans and Ashton Agar and Cameron Bancroft. COVID was hitting. Have you got to the bottom of this just yet?
Yeah. Look, we understand what happens. At the end of the day, it was in breach of the rules. Our team thought they'd done the right thing because they checked with the match referee who have approved it, but it is in contravention of the BBL playing conditions, and so we had to cop it. I'm just glad it was a game we actually lost, and the damage was minimised. But, I mean, it's been such a difficult tournament, players in, players out. Our team thought that he was a replacement player that could be used any time, but we still had to follow the technical committee approval process, and there was a misunderstanding on our team's part about what that meant. So no harm done in the long run, and we'll cop the penalty and move on.
Christina, staying on the Scorchers, they're putting together an incredible season given they've had to be, over east for almost all of the season. If they go down and go the whole way here, it'll go down as one of the great wins in West Australian cricket, I would have thought.
Oh, look, I every time they play, I'm amazed at how they're doing it with the challenges that I know they've had. And if we can get through the next two games and come out as champions, it'll be an enormous feat and something we can be really proud of.
Christina, just going back to the effect of no cricket here this summer, you may have touched on it in a press conference either prior to Christmas, but that the financial damage and setback to the WACA and cricket here in WA, have you ended up where you thought it might be financially damaging-wise, or is it going to be worse?
No, it's pretty much ended up where it is. So against our current financial year 22 budget, we'll lose $4.5 million. We obviously are going to spend the next 5 months trying to work out how to reduce our expenditure to make that smaller. But based on our current budget, it's proven to be a $4.5 million loss.
How do you recoup that?
With some very forensic work on our budget and stopping some things, holding them off till next year, things like that. So I'm not sure we're going to be able to find the whole four and a half million, but if we can halve it, that's certainly a better result.
And ideally, when we do start getting some games back here, the fans get around cricket because that's what we'd like to see when we do get games back here, fans at the games.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we've tried to do the right thing in very difficult circumstances. And, what we need to prove to everybody on the East Coast in particular, that when we get content, we really support it. So we know our members and our fans have been really sympathetic with us. We're hoping next year we can kick off again with a really strong support.
On another Nope, more positive this time. The WA Cricket Foundation Pledge a Picket initiative has been launched. Tell us a bit about this.
Yeah, so it's part of our, we have to raise, you know, around $10 to $15 million to finish off the project. And it's one of the ideas we came up that the public can get involved in. So effectively, go on to pledgeapicket.com.au and you can buy a plaque that will go on our picket fence. There's four options. You can just put your own name on, or you can choose a player from the three groups that we've got them in for additional money. But it's a great opportunity to put your name, you know, on an historic ground and to be part of our history and our future.
Terrific initiative, Christina. Hope it works well for the WA Cricket Foundation. Been a tough summer for you and everyone at the Wacker, but we do appreciate your ongoing efforts to communicate to the public and cricket supporters in general. Thanks for joining us again on Sports Day.
Thank you very much.
There it is, Christina Matthews, the CEO of the WACA. That was part of our hot topic for Barbecues Galore. Shop online and in-store at Barbecues Galore. The range, the price, the knowledge. Now you're cooking. Call our open line, 133-882. And Scully, you've got an update from the MCG.
Have I got an update? One over to go in the BBL this evening as we watch the first ball of the last over. The Stars are 2 for 261 with five balls remaining. Maxwell's just brought up his 150 off 62 balls. And Stoinis, he's not going too badly either. He's on 67 off 28.
Unbelievable. Highest ever Big Bash total, 150 to Maxwell. I think 278 is the highest ever T20 score. That includes internationals. So
they're a chance.
They're not without some chance. We'll keep you updated on that. And after this, I'll tell you what might replace the one-day series here in Australia, potentially. Oh. A blast from the past, all part of our maybe Wednesday wines or Wednesday suggestions, thanks to DM Breaker. 133-882, it's 19 past 6.
Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. And 2022 Western Force memberships available now at westernforce.rugby.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Coming up in the back half of this hour, catching up with Eagles captain Luke Shuey and heading to Melbourne Park pretty shortly as well for a tennis update at the Australian Open. But now it's time for our Wednesday wines, thanks to DM Breaker. Imagine the best, the world's best rock breakers. Let's go to Sean in Baldivis. Hi, Sean.
Yeah, g'day, fellas. I just wanted to ask what your thoughts are with the upcoming AFL season. Specifically, I'll look at, you know, the Big Bash, the A-League, the NBL, and they've all been compromised, and compromised a fair bit. I'd almost sort of go with any of them. I could have said, look, just call it the McDonald's Cup and we'll do it properly next year. With the AFL, you can't really catch up a game that you miss. And if we're due to play Gold Coast this week and North Melbourne next week, and we miss those games because they've got too many players out, I don't know how you sort of equitably sort of work things out. So does the AFL sort of have a plan? Do you kind of think, and at what point do you go, look, it is a compromise season? Because if we miss three or four games during the season, which can't be caught up, surely it is a compromised or tainted season.
Yeah, I mean, great call, Sean. Look, I think a big part of what the AFL tried to put together over the last couple of seasons was something that was the same throughout. So whether that be shortened quarters in the first COVID year that we put together or last year with some of the rule changes, but at least equitable. I think you make a good point with compromising the season if you have to stop the season for 4 weeks because half the teams have lost, you know, 10 players each, or do you have to have a team playing three games in 7 days or things like that, which I think will be very hard to do. It makes the AFL season upcoming, which is coming very quickly, I might add. It's halfway through January. We're not too far away from pre-season, and then we get into it. So look, I can't see this AFL season going as the AFL will hope.
What about what other squads are doing? And I think other teams are being able to do is enlarge their size of numbers in terms of possibly adding five or six extra players. I'm not sure how that works salary cap-wise, but under COVID conditions, to have some buffer.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's difficult. Well, salary cap, they're very protective of that over at the AFL. But even just logistically, just think about if a team's over in, say, West Coast or Fremantle is in Melbourne and they have a COVID outbreak, Can you even get the players from Western Australia that are probably on your extra list that may or may not be over with you? Can you fly them in? Can you, you know, do what they've done in the BBL and have effectively part-time players playing a couple of games? Do we see that perhaps, Skeet? Maybe I should actually be going for a few more runs this year. I don't know.
Well, your back's not that great. But the other point that is worth making is, unlike the NBL or the A-League, where they can and do play two games in a week, it's a lot more taxing, I would have thought, for AFL players to try to manufacture that scenario of two games or inside that 7-day bracket.
Yeah, I guess the only advantage there is squads are around the 40 to 44 mark. So if that was a scenario that did play out, you could do it, but it would mean, as long as you had a full list available, that, you know, your 15 through to your 22nd player are going to be pretty low-level players when we look at the AFL. I mean, it's the top level in the country, so you're going to have players 35 through to 42 playing for you on the weekend, playing for premiership points. Is everyone happy with that? I would be. I'd love to see some of the young guys get a game in that sort of situation, but, you know, the equity and all teams being equal, I don't think we're going to see that this year. There's going to be stages where your best five players are out because of COVID.
And you guys went through, I think, what, 4 or 5 day turnarounds back in the first year of COVID, is that right?
Yeah, it's not fun. Playing AFL games within a, you know, 5 day period, you can't do it for a long period of time. If that does happen, you need weeks off in order for the list to recover. But you're going to see weeks where the AFL teams and the best AFL teams don't have their best players available. And are we okay with that as fans? I am. I think it'll be okay, but it'll be interesting to see when we get to that point.
Let's continue with our Wednesday wines. Mine is, of course, about losing a one-day series, which isn't the be-all and end-all. But what I'd like to see as a replacement, Will, is going back to the early 90s, we saw Australia take on Australia A. And it caused some real angst amongst the Australian top dogs, because they had to face the Australian A side, which included players like Damien Martin, who was captain, and Paul Rifle, guys that were pushing up, coming through the ranks and trying to take the spot of the top team. And you know what happened during those matches between the two sides? The fans got behind the underdogs, and the Aussie boys weren't happy. Mark Taylor and the team, they thought it was horrendous that their own supporters were jumping on board the A team.
I know you've classified this as not purely your own idea, but you are saying it. I love it. I think that would be great from a playing point of view. You'd have the, you call them the underdogs, the guys that are trying to get those 11 spots in the A team. They would be coming in as hard as they've ever bowled the bowlers. The batters would be slogging the big dogs, and the big dogs, I reckon they'd just be holding back a little bit. Don't want to quite do a little calf or do a little injury.
So bear in mind, don't think the players themselves necessarily enjoyed that scenario in terms of how it matched up. But the fans, Cricket Australia, in terms of a financial boost after losing those one days, it wouldn't be the worst scenario. I don't think it's going to happen simply because of where we are with bubbles and COVID, a long way from the early 90s. But it certainly created a lot of interest and a lot of angst from the top team. You've got a Wednesday wine, which relates to tennis. We're about to cross to Melbourne Park in just a minute.
Before we do get an update, like, I watched Nick Kyrgios, and I know he's a divisive figure here in Australia for fans, but my whine is why do we look, hate's a strong word, but why do some people dislike him so much? I watched him last night. He played some of the best tennis you'll ever see. At times, tennis can be, I don't know, not the most entertaining. It can go through stages of quite boring stuff. Well, one thing you can give to Nick Kyrgios, he's not boring. He's good to watch. He was sipping beers and he was hitting balls between his legs and he was having fun. What's wrong with that, Skeet? Is it okay for a professional player to be having fun at what he does and being entertaining? What more do you want, Mark?
I think the only thing that supporters or fans in Australia would like to see from Nick and Bernard, whoever's representing the country, is maybe not those tantrums and behaving really badly in terms of to officials. That's the side of these players that I'm sure they all do it. Djokovic as bad as anyone we saw at the US Open. But they're the times when you think, oh, come on, Nick. You know, you're showing us the good side and the bad side. But you're saying you've got to take the best and worst of some of these characters because that's how they operate.
I think you're seeing him. I think that's exactly right. You're seeing him. You're seeing the good. You're seeing the bad. Sometimes we're not all Roger Federer. So sometimes we can't tick every box. You don't have guys that do the right thing all the time. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. And sometimes maybe you don't just chop the head off. Maybe you just enjoy them for what he is, because I certainly do.
Yeah, Nick Kyrgios certainly gets eyeballs watching the tennis, and that's big for the Australian Open. And speaking of which, we're going to cross there in just a minute. That was our Wednesday wine segment. Imagine the best. DM Breaker, distributors of the world's best rock breakers, dmbreaker.com.au. It's 29 past 6 here on Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia, the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6.
And 2022 Western Force memberships available now at westernforce.rugby.
Yes, welcome back to the show. Let's head straight to Melbourne Park. Plenty of tennis to talk about, and Craig O'Shaughnessy is a tennis strategy coach. He joins us from Melbourne now. Craig, thanks for your company tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. A beautiful evening here in Melbourne. Sorry you guys are not here enjoying it as well.
We're jealous. In fact, I've never been to an Australian Open, which says something. I've been to a lot of sporting events in Melbourne, but not the Open. Craig, can you fill us in with some of the results today? Ash Barty, to start with, the Australian world number one, could not have been more impressive.
She looks amazing. She won a first round 0-1. She won a second round 1-1. Everything for Barty so far is about dictating with the forehand. She's got 15 forehand winners through her first two rounds, only one backhand winner. So when you watch Ash Barty, the thing to understand is she uses her backhand, in particular her backhand slice, to stay in the point, to not go for too much, but to then extract the short ball that she can then jump on with the forehand. So, you know, they're two very different roles. Kind of the forehand is the sword, the backhand is the shield, and she does an excellent job of using the backhand to set up the forehand to finish the point.
Craig, Will Schofield here, mate. I feel like everyone's forgotten about the men's tournament and who are the good players who are playing. Rafa Nadal was impressive today. Look, he's looking as good as ever.
Yeah, he is. You know, somebody asked me at the start, you know, normally when people ask, it's like, okay, you pencil Novak in and you don't even bring anybody else's name up. Until Novak's out of the draw, you don't dare say a second person. Now, Novak is out of the draw, and I think Rafa could be the guy. He could be the guy, you know, especially because he's going for number 21 at the moment. He's really got a lot to play for. He's a little bit under the radar because he's had COVID, but the first couple of rounds, really, really good. 31 forehand winners, 11 off the backhand side. I mean, this guy is the king of running around and spanking forehands from all over the court. Interesting, he served in volley twice. He won both of those. You know, he did it a lot in the U.S. Open final where he beat Daniil Medvedev. I suspect he's going to start to do a little bit more of that in case he needs it for later in the tournament.
Do you give any chance to Nick Kyrgios against Daniil Medvedev, despite how good Nick was last night?
Sorry, is your question, does Nick have a chance?
Yes.
No. I wish I had something more palatable for the Australian audience, but man, Medvedev is just a nightmare. He's going to stand back. He's going to use his backhand. You know, he's ungainly, unwieldy, uncoachable strokes, and he's going to get so many balls back in play. He's going to be running Nick side to side. You know, Nick's going to have a near perfect day serving, and then I don't even know how he's going to break his nerves. So I just slash the forehand when it's been. Man, I think Daniil Medvedev is going to get through that one fairly comfortably.
Talking about Aussies playing highly ranked opponents, a bit of a live update. Zverev is playing and John Millman on Rod Laver Arena as we speak, 6-4, and it's still yet to start in the second set. Is John Millman any chance to knock over the third seed?
Yeah, it's a really tough one for John. You know, John's got an exceptional backhand. He's made all, you know, his career around his backhand. The technique is simple. You know, he runs all day. But the problem is the guy on the other side of it has a better backhand. And when they stack up backhand to backhand, John, you know, usually likes himself against basically anyone in the world. But Alexander Zverev, probably one of the best two or three backhands. And, you know, it's going to be tough. You know, then, you know, all of a sudden, John's having to run and hit forehands, which is not his strongest side. Zverev's forehand is better. Zverev serves bigger. You know, John Millman is a great player and will give you, you know, everything he's got. But this is a really tough matchup for him.
And just quickly, we'd mentioned Ash Barty. Naomi Osaka looms large for her, I think, in the fourth round.
Yeah, she does. Osaka's doing well. What's interesting is for both ladies, the average rally length for Ash Barty for her first couple of matches is 4.2 shots. Naomi Osaka is averaging 4 shots. So that's a serve, a return, and then the two ground strokes that follow. So, you know, you see a lot of short rallies and long rallies, but it's funny. It all averages out to around four. Now, for Naomi, she has played 143 points in a rally length of 0-4 shots. So that's all the short rallies that total up to four. She only played 21 of the long rallies of 9+. So Naomi Osaka is getting it done early in the point, which is exactly what you want to do to save your body for later in the tournament. So, man, if those two have got to play each other, look out. That's going to be one of the best matches that we could possibly see here this year at the Aussie Open.
Oh, some lovely stats there, Craig. We appreciate your time. Hopefully we get a chance to touch base with you during the course of the tournament. Enjoy the tennis, and once again, we'll speak to you shortly.
Very good. Thanks, guys.
There it is, Craig O'Shaughnessy, tennis strategy coach, joining us at Melbourne Park, and doesn't give Nick Kyrgios a huge chance against Daniil Medvedev tomorrow.
For what it's worth, I do. I'm on Nick's train. Let's go, Nick. You've written him off very early as well, Mark Reddings.
I just think you look at the rankings, you look at the performances, and you stick with what you know.
Get around him.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. The Aussies will do that. That tennis update, by the way, for the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. It's as silent as the critics. Find out more at kia.com/AU. Tell you what, looking forward to our next guest here on Sports Day. He is the captain of the West Coast Eagles, Luke Shuey. They're back in training. They're looking to redeem themselves after a poor 2021. That's next.
Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6.
And 2022 Western Force memberships available now at westernforce.rugby.
Great to have your company on Sports Day as we roll into our chats with mates. Australia's most satisfied customers, NBN from $59. We go straight to the top at the West Coast Eagles. The captain himself, Luke Shuey, joining us for a chat. Luke, welcome to Sports Day. Thanks for your company.
Thanks, Skater. Good to be here. Went straight to the top and couldn't get them, so you went to me. Is that right?
That's close to the money. No, we thought we'd get the captain to find out exactly what's happening at the club pre-season, starting to ramp up, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it is, mate. Yeah, it's always a pretty quick ramp in January now with the limited time we have back before Christmas. So January is a big month, and we're well into the thick of it. In the 42-degree heat this morning, so that was nice, but all ticking along nicely.
Luke Shuey, Will Schofield here. You might remember me from winning you the 2018 flag. We'll keep it professional, though, on air. Who's looking good at the moment from West Coast? Who's setting the track alight? And if we're going to use some cliches, who's in career best shape right now?
The big January calls. I don't know. It's always a tough one to predict, but I will say I've liked the look of young Campbell Chesser. Good Melbourne grammar boy from Victoria, and he's come over, got a really mature head on his shoulders, and we've all been really excited by what we're seeing in the short term, but I'm looking forward to seeing him play some footy, hopefully this year for the club.
What's he had to say about his journey across the Nullarbor? It was a bit of a strange one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was probably something that no other 18-year-old kid's had to do, but probably reflects the maturity he's got. He wanted to be there on January 6th, day one, when we started after Christmas. And for him to do that, he had to have done his 2 weeks quarantine in Perth. And even before that, he had to have spent 2 weeks in a green light city, which Adelaide was. So we drove to Adelaide 2 weeks later, drove to Perth on his own and made the trip across. He actually boarded at Melbourne Grammar for 4 years. From the age of 15, so he's pretty used to looking after himself. So he's got a good head on his shoulders.
Luke, clearly the players were stung at the way the club finished last season. Have you noticed on return that there's a greater zest for training, a more determination? Have you noticed any change in attitude, or is it a new season and that's been put to one side?
A little bit, Skeeter. Yeah, we've tightened a few things up around the joint, but that is only a 1-2% thing. You know, the actions when the games roll around is what really matters. So we're not getting too carried away with the way we're training. I'm sure there's plenty of other clubs pretty happy with how they're going as well. So we're doing what we need to be doing, but the real work will start obviously when we get into the nitty gritty of it, and obviously round one rolls around, but happy with where we're at the moment. We've had a pretty good block so far.
According to a couple of track watches, the Eagles looking at maybe using the corridor more at training, at least. Now, whether that's a change to your game style, without giving too much away, is there going to be an adjustment of sorts that we'll notice this year?
Yeah, always easier to use the corridor when the coaches are defending. obviously, our ball movement hasn't been too crash hot the last couple of years, so it's something we've had a look at. We've had a little bit of a look at the method around the contest and a way to probably get more pressure and tackle numbers up against the good teams, because that really cost us last year. So, all these little things we're working on, hopefully we'll come to fruition pretty early in the season, and fans will hopefully have a bit more to cheer about this year than what they have the last couple.
What's it been like having some new eyes and voices around the club? You've got Jared Schofield, Matty Knights, Jacob Brennan's back at the helm in the coaching ranks. Has it been a good freshening up, getting some new coaches into the club?
Yeah, it has, mate. Yeah, we obviously lost some really good people last year. But, you know, getting guys like Nider and Scully across from two clubs that have gone really well, it's some really really important intel to get, and they bring some fresh ideas, which have obviously worked at their last clubs. And Jacob Brennan, playing group favourite amongst the boys, so good to have him back working with the young back line. He's doing a great job as well. So, yeah, as you said, really exciting with the fresh ideas, and some of the stuff they've bought has been exciting to work on. And look, if it works, hopefully it takes us up the ladder.
Bit of a tough one for you here, mate. What's it been like trying to lead on field as a captain? You're in the position, you're West Coast best player, and you haven't been able to put yourself out on the park as commonly as you would have liked. What's that like been like for the last couple of years, and what's the outlook for 2022 on that front?
Yeah, it has been frustrating. I think, you know, when you're talking or thinking about leadership, the first thing you want to do is play well and set the standards. And not being able to do that was tough and frustrating. But obviously, with the role, there's plenty to do off field at the same time. So it wasn't as though I was sitting around twiddling my thumbs with nothing to do. But as a player, mate, I'm still wanting to play footy and play good footy, and it's still what I love doing. So hopefully, getting on the park this year is a nice change up for me. I haven't played a lot of footy the last couple of years, but in saying that, I mean the 8 or 9 years from when I was probably 20, 21 years of old, I had a really good run with injury. So I'm not someone who can sit here and complain about not being on the park. But as you said, in the position of captain, yeah, it'd be nice to be out there leading the way a little bit more than what I have.
And soft tissue injuries, which have really brought you back to earth, Luke, in the last couple of years. Have you found a training method, or do you feel comfortable with where you're at now in terms of what load you can put into your body?
I'm going okay at the moment. There's a lot going on behind the scenes with the sports science boys and the work they put in, not just for myself, but all the guys, really, particularly the older guys that probably need a bit more managing. They're doing a hell of a lot of work behind the scenes to make sure we're on the park as much as we can. So what we're doing is working at the moment for all of us. And, we don't get too carried away thinking about that, because as I found out the last couple of years, they can sneak up on you, the soft tissue injuries. And looking at the next session and no further ahead, because if I don't get that right, it's another 2 or 3 weeks on the sidelines. But what we're doing at the moment is working, and I'm enjoying it. And I feel like I've had a really good couple of months training leading into pre-season games in a couple of weeks.
For some of the older players, and even some of the ones who are younger, Brad Shepherd's retirement and that effect on the group, and maybe the harsh reality of how quickly the game can send you packing through health or otherwise.
Yeah, I guess we always know that stuff deep down, and but when that actually happens, it is a reminder and a bit of a wake-up call to appreciate what we have. And it's been really sad to see two of our good mates over the last 12 months have to retire because of concussion issues. So obviously it's a good reminder that there's probably more to life than football, and those guys need to go away and obviously focus on their health and general lifestyle well-being. The concussion and brain injury stuff's obviously nothing to muck around with or take lightly. So sad to see them go, but I think at the end of the day we're happy that they're both on the right path to a healthy lifestyle, and it's probably not going to eventuate into anything too serious, which is a good thing.
What was Shep like in front of the group when he retired, Luke? Was he not happy with his contribution but content, or do you feel like he felt like he was left with no other option than to walk away and he'll leave unfulfilled?
Yeah, I think obviously you knowing Shep as well, he he wouldn't walk away if he had a bit more to give. So I'm tipping he was probably told behind closed doors that not to go on. And yeah, that's really sad. But he, as you know, Shep loves a gag. They normally don't go down too well from his mouth. But he was in good spirits when he spoke to the group, and obviously left on good terms. And I think looking at his career from as a teammate's point of view, he can be really proud of what he was able to achieve over the 12 or 13 years.
He didn't roll the "I've got something to announce, boys. I'm signing a 5-year contract" out at the start, did he? He didn't use that gag, did he?
You know, that don't they all roll with that? And you get like 7 or 8 boys give it the token laugh, and it's not funny. To be honest, I reckon I'll use it when the day comes.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Luke, skipper for 2022, is that just about where you want to be? Happy to continue in the role for the foreseeable?
Oh, mate, happy to continue if that's what the playing group want. Yeah. Look, if it wasn't to be, then I'd be fully supportive of that and fully supportive of whoever it is in the role. But I think we're voting on the leadership group next week. So, look, if that's what comes of it, then great. But it's I've said it before, Skeet, it's not something I feel like I have to do. But if my teammates want me to do it, then obviously I'd be more than willing to put my hand up and do it. But looking forward to getting into it, as I said, and hopefully having an injury-free run and being able to lead by example a bit more this year than what I have the last couple.
Last one from me. You would have seen all the sports over the summer, COVID, teams going down left, right and centre. I suppose it's inevitable that's going to hit everyone at some stage, but footy clubs, I guess, are having to brace for another year of high uncertainty, which I thought at the end of last year we might have been at the end of.
Yeah, it looked like it was on the way up, or you know, our lifestyles and the well-being of sport in general was on the way up last year, but it's taken a bit of a turn, and obviously sport all around the world, it's just too hard to predict what's happening even tomorrow. So yeah, obviously this year's going to be interrupted at some stage, and quite possibly might be the most interrupted season we've had out of the last two. So look, only time will tell. It's hard to prepare for something you don't know what's going to happen. Obviously we know that it's going to be COVID related, but you just don't know in what regard. So look, fingers crossed it's not too serious, and we can go out there and put on a bit of a spectacle for all the football lovers across the country. But I dare say there's going to be a few interruptions here and there.
Thanks for joining us on Sports Day today, Luke. Just lay off those chips and the midnight trips to the fridge, mate. Might keep you on the park a little bit longer.
Yeah, the weight's been an issue, so those salt and vinegars might have to wait another couple of years, mate. Good on you.
Thanks, Books. Luke Shuey, skipper of the West Coast Eagles, good fella, great player, and we're expecting him to lead the club through 2022 when the players, as he said, votes next week. That segment chats with mates for Australia's most satisfied customers. NBN from just $59. Search Mate online. More of Sports Day coming your way shortly.
Sports Day for Kia, the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6.
And 2022 Western Force memberships available now at westernforce.rugby.
A busy first hour of the show here on Sports Day. Coming up after the 7 o'clock news, we'll check in with Wildcats coach Scott Morrison, Western Force General Manager of Rugby, Matty Hodgson, Callan Williams, a young WA motor racing gun who's going to find himself in Formula 2 competition this year, and Mark Allen with golf on the agenda through the summer of 2021-22. We're here for Toolkit Depot, Top Brands Ultimate Range Pro Service. The 7 o'clock news is coming your way next on 882 6PR.
Sports Day for Kia, the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6.
And 2022 Western Force memberships available now at westernforce.rugby.
Welcome back to Sports Day, big second hour of the show. We kick it off with our NBL segment thanks to Pentanet, enemy identified. Ordinary internet, join Pentanet's Operation Nexus. We go straight to the top of the Perth Wildcats. The coach, Scott Morrison, joins us. Scott, thanks for taking our call. Obviously, you've had time to reflect on what was a pretty disappointing performance against the Adelaide 36ers.
Yeah, well, I mean, anytime you lose, it's disappointing. So we're just trying to regroup today, lick our wounds, and try to get better for the next one.
You would have watched the tapes, Scott. What do you put it down to? How did you find your way to losing that one?
Well, we had a good lengthy film session about that. I think the biggest things were our defensive rebounding and our poor start. Those are the obvious ones, and a few other things that we could improve. But our focus moving forward will definitely be coming out with more intensity, trying to be a little bit better in defensive transition at the start of the games, and then finishing our possessions and not putting to waste some good defensive effort in the half court.
So you're wanting to find some answers to slow start, Scott. How do you do that? Is it a physical thing or a mental thing? Is it a mindset?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I know we shared with the guys a stat today that in the first 4 minutes of our first seven games, so in 28 minutes total, we've lost by 30 points. So that's pretty bad, but it's also kind of eye-opening. So hopefully the guys will react to that, and as coaching staff, we can try and focus on just coming out a little bit sharper. The flip side of that coin, obviously, is we're doing pretty well the rest of the game. But it's a shame to let those bad starts hurt us, and hopefully it'll be the last game that we're pointing to that as something we got to fix up.
Yeah, I'll say that you won't like this as an excuse, Coach, but maybe a reason. I mean, let's be honest, the COVID setup that you went through with so many players struck down, can you at least put that down to maybe part of the reason for the tardy start, or is that being too generous?
No, I think, I mean, I didn't want to use it as an excuse, and I don't think it was a... It was a good excuse, but it definitely threw us off our rhythm and our preparation. Adelaide went through the same thing, but much earlier in the month, so they had a lot more time to train and prepare. I think we could have used that time to train and prepare, but at the same time, you know, if we do a little bit better job blocking out on the rebounds and getting back in transition that first quarter, maybe we're not talking about that. But I think, you know, I think I'd be, you know, amiss to not at least understand that it would be a tough situation to be in as a player, and I'm glad we got it out of the way. It would have been nice to win still, but for sure it affected us, if for nothing else, a lack of training.
Yeah, well, Kevin White actually spoke to us last week and said it felt like he was hit by a truck by the virus, and others not so affected. But so are some players still struggling to get back to full health?
Well, I would argue that if he got hit by a truck, he wouldn't have been playing in a week, depending on what kind of truck it was. But that being said, I didn't go through it, knock on wood, yet, so I'm not going to discount or make light of it. But I'm sure he would take COVID over getting hit by a truck any day of the week if he really got down to it. But I'm hoping that we see tomorrow when we train and practice tomorrow that the guys are kind of gotten that second wind and we can put this behind us. But that being said, I know it's different for everybody, so hopefully we have more guys that are on the quicker recovery side than not.
Let's just call it a small truck type vehicle, a smaller side skate. Scott, you must be happy with your recruit in Vic Law. He's been quite consistent throughout the year and probably close to your best player in the loss yesterday. You must be happy with his output.
Yeah, I mean, he's been playing really well and definitely has carried our team in certain stretches. I think that, you know, he has to improve a few things as well. He's been getting off to a slow start, but at the same time, dominating at times later in the game. So I guess we need him and everyone else to come out firing and come out intense and urgent next game, and then we can kind of reap the benefits of that down the stretch. But no question, Vic's been one of the many bright spots of the season so far, and we're going to need him to continue to play well to have a shot here as the season gets a little deeper.
And Illawarra on Saturday, so a relatively quick turnaround, but that was all part of the schedule you're expecting to cop, and that's going to be a tough assignment.
Yeah, they're a real talented team, maybe the most talented on paper in the league, even though the league's pretty stacked and deep. But they have some really, you know, special one-on-one players that can hurt you. They excel at one of the things that we've struggled at, which is transition defense. They're really fast and up-tempo, so we've already spoken about trying to get back and at least make them score on us in the half court. But even stopping that will be no easy task. So we have our work cut out for us, and not much time to get ready, but at least the guys will be hungry for a better performance than what we showed yesterday, and that usually works in a team's favour.
Scott, we speak to people and coaches and talent across multiple sports here on Sports Day, and it sort of got me thinking it must be really important as a coach to be keeping your reserves and your bench players really motivated in, you know, not even just COVID, but a lot of travelling going on. You must have to lean a bit more on players that aren't getting the regular minutes, especially when you start losing players to different things around the league.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how it's been for us all season. I don't think we've had one game yet with a full roster. This next game, if all goes well in training, might be the closest we've had to it. A few guys or a couple guys are still on minutes restrictions, and Corey Sherwell will be out for sure. But we're getting closer to that, and I'm hoping that those opportunities and minutes for the bench guys that they've gotten will serve them well when they're called upon later in the season. And, you know, anything can happen at any time, so it pays to have guys with some game reps, and I trust that they're going to stay ready even when they're not getting the call. So, you know, we can use our depth to our advantage as the season moves on here.
Coach, I know you've got a little or on Saturday, 7 games in 7 days from the NBL. Have you got a picture moving past that, or is it still a bit sketchy?
Well, I mean, everything seems to be kind of you wake up in the morning and see if everything is the same or has it changed, but we're planning to go back to Illawarra in a few days' time after that for our next game and then stay on for Sydney. And then if all goes well with our own travel, hopefully get back home for a game on February 6th. That'll be a welcome sight for all our guys if that happens. So we're trying to stay focused on this next game, but I'm sure everyone's starting to look ahead on the calendar for that day we can get home.
Absolutely. Can't wait for the Wildcats to return to the Jungle RAC Arena. Scott, thanks for your time. We appreciate it. We know it's a bit of a challenge over there at the moment for so many reasons, but lots of West Australian basketball supporters are in your corner, and we hope you get the W against the Hawks on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, and appreciate you guys having me on. All the best for the rest of the week.
There it is, Scott Morrison, coach of the Perth Wildcats, currently second on the table behind Melbourne United. They play the third-placed Hawks on Saturday. Should be a ripping contest. That update in the NBL, thanks to Pentanet. Join Operation Nexus, Pentanet's community defence force fighting back against ordinary internet. More of Sports Day coming up shortly.
Sports Day for Kia, the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6.
And 2022 Western Force memberships available now at westernforce.rugby.
Thanks for your company, Sports Day, on this Wednesday night. We turn our attention to rugby, and the Western Force are just about to kick off their new season. The general manager of rugby out there is Matty Hodgson, a well-known name in these parts. He joins us for a chat. Matty, thanks for your time.
Yeah, no worries. Pleasure. Always good to chat.
Let's start off with what's going to be a really exciting season for the Western Force. It begins against the ACT Brumbies on Saturday, February 19, HPF Park. The borders will be open, and hopefully we can get a really big crowd to support the boys in blue.
Yeah, that's the plan, but who knows? hopefully the borders are open. But yeah, no, we're pretty excited to get 7 home games and kick it off against the Brumbies. That we've got a bit of rivalry and fancy. We've got probably 3 or 4 of their up-and-coming sign with us, so it'll be a bit of a battle there, I reckon.
Matty, Will Schofield here. How are the boys looking? How's the pre-season treated them? Obviously coming to very close to a close. How's everyone's fitness and shape coming into the season?
Yeah, pre-season's always fun as a manager or a coach because you're always undefeated, so it's going well for my behalf. I was just catching up with my S&C, and it will probably be the second year that we'll have a full squad available for round one, which is pretty exciting. Obviously, bar what happens in the next few weeks of trials, but to have everyone be available is pretty exciting. And so we've got 2 new coaches come on board as well, so they've sort of got their teeth into it. And I think you'll see definitely a different mindset from our playing group, and really pushed an attacking focus. So we're very excited to sort of transfer that. Firstly, this weekend we have a bit of a battle between ourselves out at Wanneroo at Fan Day, but then against the Trolls, just to see how it goes from training to game, because it's always a different beast once you change your opposition and they start moving at you.
And so, Matt, when you talk about the trials, obviously the border controls will determine perhaps who you can and can't play. What sort of quality can you get in terms of opposition leading into that first match?
No, we flipped. We did have the Reds coming over, but obviously we preempted that January 30 would have, but we had them coming over the 4th. So we just had to shift a bit, and we're going to head over east and get two games away, because something that we learnt last year, and with a new playing group, new coaching group, that cohesion can only come through playing good games. So we'll have some good opposition. That news will come out shortly. But yeah, we're going to go over east and get two games in and come back when the borders open on the Sunday, the 6th of Feb.
Matt, some exciting news. It was always my favourite jumper to play in the Indigenous jumper. Western Force are going to be wearing an Indigenous jersey all year for every match, home and away. It's great stuff.
Yeah, it's something that we sort of picked up last year. Again, like most teams, we did our One Nations, our First Nations round last year, and had such success with it, both internally and externally. So we thought, well, let's bring it into our full marketing and collateral, and sort of started with the training gear that we wear every day into our fan packs, our membership cards. And then rather than doing one game, we're doing all the games in a jersey, both home and away, with our pitcher, that shows that we're not only representing Perth, but representing all Western Australia, and trying to show what history we have, and that's pretty exciting, and something that the club has sort of brought in from staff to players. So it's pretty exciting to hopefully get that out on round one.
Yes, and for the whole season, as Will mentioned, that's a real commitment, and I'm sure it's going to be warmly embraced by supporters as well. Just looked at Tim Sampson, fifth year at the helm. That's flown by, just from an outsider's point of view. So he's obviously ensconced there and really trying to make an impact with this group. How's he responding, and how's he finding the challenge of getting this team up and running this season?
Yeah, it's always a challenge, as you obviously, with what's happened over the previous years and going from rapid rugby into super rugby pretty quickly, to have a bit of player change and obviously build our depth is something that we've been focused on. So he's had a bit of a change with playing group. So to bring that cohesion together, I think, is pretty exciting. And obviously with a different coaching group, as we want the more out of our players, the more out of our program, we're getting better in every aspect, from S&C to physio, and coaching's an element of that. So we've gone from 4 coaches to 5. So just getting that balance right, and we really want to push strong and get those players to do what they're doing on the training pack out on round one.
Speaking with Matt Hodgson, he's a general manager of rugby at Western Force. Matt, are you expecting to have to travel away into hubs, into bubbles? I know you're going to say you don't know and you can't, plan for the future, but you must think that the season may get somewhat interrupted given the rules over here in WA.
Yeah, no, it's something we'll plan for the unplanned, is what we sort of train for at the moment, and we've brought in a sports psychologist to help with our mindset, more about how we could be planned to play on a Saturday against one opposition, but the game could be on a Friday or a Sunday. And we know through watching the BBL that these changes are going to happen, and we've just got to be flexible. And I think something that we've got to tie into is our mental strength, and that's a bit of work we've been doing on, and keeping the players informed. Unfortunately, I had the pleasure of becoming the COVID manager, and I have to be up to date with all the information, so they get sick of me telling them what they can and can't do. But yeah, we're ready for pretty much not the draw to be what it is, because I think there's going to be changes, and trying to work through that. The team that has the best mental capacity to be flexible, I think we'll get some good results.
Notice on social media, Matty, that you've got obviously a Tongan commitment and contingent in the Western Force, and their thoughts and their hopes with their family over there in Tonga with the disaster over there with the eruption of the volcano. Have they found some peace? And obviously it's a worrying time when you're on the other side of, not where you should be at home for many of these people.
Yeah, I think it's been a tough time for them, but we as a club have come together. Unfortunately, through COVID, that they can't go back and help. As we know, with all Pacific nations, they're a big family-driven culture, and to not be able to go back and help. So we're trying to find other ways, as we as a whole club can go back and sending stuff back and sending our messages of support to both the Tongan family that are here that have lost someone or lost something, but also sending messages back to people back on the island. So, and we'll continue to do stuff during the year as hopefully the borders open up and we can do some stuff there, because something that we very patriotic. He's supporting our family here, and having a big Pacific ultra here is something that we're, as a club, very keen to get behind.
Absolutely, Matty. Doing a great job community-wise, the Western Force, the Indigenous jersey, which we'll see throughout the upcoming season. Best of luck, ACT Brumbies, Saturday, February 19. We'll speak to hopefully yourself and a couple of the players before then, but thanks for joining us on Sports Day.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for the call.
There it is, Western Force General Manager of Rugby, Matt Hodgson. The Force are coming your way in February.
Sports Day for Kia, the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6.
And 2022 Western Force memberships available now at westernforce.rugby.
Great to have your company on Sports Day Wednesday night. Time to talk motor racing, and Callan Williams, a young man on the rise, 21 years of age, and he's stepping ever so closer to joining Daniel Ricciardo in the Formula One ranks. He's become WA's first ever Formula 2 driver. He joins us for a chat now. Callan, congratulations first up. It's a mighty achievement.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm really happy for the opportunity that I've got for this season. I think the team is incredibly professional and passionate as well, which is also really important because, you know, it's one thing being able to do your job really well, but it's another thing when that's part of your passion as well. And it, you know, all of them want to do their absolute best to succeed. And I think for me to have this opportunity in that environment is absolutely perfect.
Callan, where are you joining us from, mate? Where are you speaking to us from in the world?
I'm currently in Italy at the moment. So I was actually with the team last week doing some preparation on the simulator, et cetera, everything to get ready for the start of the season. But now I'm at a little further south in Italy at a place called Formula Medicine. It's a really good mental and physical training centre that's designed around motorsport. And so the whole goal is to train people both physically and mentally to be as good as they can be, as fit as they can be for motorsport. And that's where I am now. I've spent quite a lot of time here over the last year, and I'll be spending even more time here this year because, to me, it's the perfect way to prepare physically and mentally.
So you've stepped up from the F3 into the F2. What's the biggest step up for you? Is it the mental change, or is there some physical changes you have to make in order to do well at the next level?
So there's some physical changes. It's a tougher car to drive. It's heavier. The steering, the effort you have to put into the steering is quite a bit more than the F3. And also the cornering forces that you experience is also greater. So you have to improve your upper body strength and neck strength quite a bit from Formula 3, and also your endurance, because the races are 1.5 times longer. In F3, the race is about 40 minutes, but in F2, the main race is over 1 hour usually. Wow. So there's some extra endurance and upper body strength and neck strength involved there. But in terms of the car, the car is completely different. It's not just like a Formula 3 car, but a bit more powerful and a bit more aero. The actual car is massively different. The brakes are completely different. In Formula 3, for example, we had steel brakes, so they weren't incredibly temperature sensitive. You could use the brakes at pretty much any time and you'd get the same amount of power from them. But now in Formula 2, we have the carbon brakes, and they're incredibly temperature sensitive. And when they're not up to temperature, you get almost no power from them. But when they are up to the temperature, the amount of stopping power you get from the carbon brakes is unbelievable. To me, that was the biggest difference, the biggest change that I had from Formula 3. Even with so many other things being different, the turbo, the amount of power, the aero, the different tires, the heavier car. To me, out of all that, the biggest difference was still the brakes because of how sensitive they are to temperature and also how much power they have. We're strapped in the car with a 6-point harness. And the first time I hit the brakes and they're up to temperature, it still felt like I got thrown forward. So they're amazing brakes.
Speaking with Callan Williams on Sports Day, who's just found himself a Formula 2 contract with Trident Motorsport. It sounds like you're having to re-educate yourself in many ways. I just thought, not being a motor racing expert, Formula 3, Formula 2, it's just a slight change, but there's It seems like a real adjustment to the way about you go about your business.
Yeah. So among all these things that are different in the car, there's also all of that creates a different driving style to use these different elements in the best way you can. And so you have to do a lot of work, whether it's, you know, usually on the simulator, like I've been doing with the team, to work on these different driving techniques to be able to drive this car as fast as you can. Because if you try and drive this car in the same way you try and drive a Formula 3 car, it's just not going to work, because that's not the car you've got. This car is not as agile as the Formula 3. Yes, it corners quicker. It's a faster car overall, but it doesn't react as quickly to the inputs you give it. And so that creates a massive difference in driving style, the way you use the tires, because not only are the tires bigger, they actually act in a much different way to how the tires on a Formula 3 car act. And so the way that you lean on the tires going into a corner is also a massive difference. And there's a lot to get your head around. And that's why, you know, we're not racing till March, but I've been doing simulator prep with the team since last week. So there's a lot of work to go with perfecting the driving style. I was really happy with where I was at the end of the test, but there's still a lot of improvement to go before I'm really perfect with this car.
Callan, there's been numerous Australians come before you, a bit of trailblazing. You think back to Mark Webber, there's probably some before him that I'm too ignorant to understand. Mark Webber, Daniel Ricciardo, of course, Oscar Piastri and Jack Doohan of late. Have you been able to lean on any of these guys for knowledge or just using them as general inspiration?
I've spoken with Dan Ricciardo a few times. I've met with him over the last few years a couple of times. And he's given me some advice, which has been great. But in terms of other people in the paddock, you know, for example, Oscar or the other Australian drivers who I've actually raced against, you never actually interact much with them, because when you're at the only time you ever sort of see them is when you're at the racetrack. And when you're at the racetrack, you're so focused on what you're doing with the team that you never even speak to most of the drivers. You know, I've never even spoken with half the drivers on the grid, maybe more than that. So it's quite strange to be around all these people so much for a whole year and season, but not even know, you know, you don't even know what their voice sounds like. So it is a bit strange. But I have spoken with Dan Ricciardo a few times when we've both been in Perth, and he's given me some really great insights into his mindset and the way he approaches things and how he overcomes some mental roadblocks to really perform consistently well.
Callan, given you're stepping up to Formula 2 now, I'm sure you've got a game plan. You sound like a young man that has it all set out in front of him. How long, ideally, there's 22 competitors in this competition as it stands. How many years before you're eyeing off that Formula 1 step?
I think the optimal timeline for progression through Formula 2, if you're going to say, you know, what's the optimal period of time, is 2 years. 2 years in Formula 2 and then to Formula 1. That's really the optimal period of time. It was the same with Formula 3. The time frame was 2 years in Formula 3 and then to Formula 2, which is what I've done in these last few years. And so, yeah, now the goal is the same, 2 years and then step up. That's usually a pretty good time frame.
Okay, and do you need to win the F2 in order to get yourself an F1 spot, or is it a natural progression? How does that work for listeners?
You don't necessarily have to win, but you do have to accumulate enough super license points, which is the super license is the license to race in Formula 1. But to achieve this license, you have to achieve a certain number of points toward this license, which is not the same as championship points, but it relates to where you finish in certain championships, the amount of super license points you get. I believe for you need 40. I believe last time I checked for Formula 2, the top three drivers get 40, and then it sort of peters down to about 10th place getting a certain level of points. But that's sort of the goal, is to accrue enough super license points to make the step. Otherwise, without that, you unfortunately can't do anything.
On a slightly lighter note, we know it's not a cheap sport, motor racing at the best of times. Formula One are renowned for being so expensive. So, Callan, you've obviously had great support, obviously, from sponsors, etc., but also, as we like to call it in our household, it's the bank of dad who steps up and helps and does a lot, sacrificing so much your family for your career. Is that the case?
For me, a lot of the financial support comes from our sponsors. All of the financial support, sorry, comes from our sponsors and investors that we have. And over a few years that we've had the whole framework in place, we've built up a really, really positive group of people who are supporting me financially to get where I am. Notably, my main sponsor, LaserSafe, and my lead investor, Dale Alcock, have been absolutely instrumental in not only providing me with financial support, but also increasing our network to connect with more people who could be interested in supporting financially. And that's been great. You know, my family has done a huge amount for me as well. You know, unfortunately, we don't have the capacity ourselves to fund this financially. But in terms of the sacrifices that my family's made, it's absolutely unbelievable. You know, this is not just me driving a car and progressing up because, you know, I drove a car fast. It's a huge amount of work from everyone else around me. And, you know, without this support, the sacrifices my family makes, the financial support from my investors and sponsors, you know, none of this would be possible. You know, I wouldn't be racing today if it wasn't for that. And so, you know, I have to be eternally grateful for what everyone's done for me. And it's part of motorsport. It's expensive, yes. And unfortunately, that's the way it's been for a long time. And that's the way it probably always will be. And so when you enter motorsport, it's, you know, it's easy to view that as a burden, which, you know, in some senses it is the huge costs, but you have to view it as an asset you need to have to progress. You need to have the financial backing, wherever that comes from. It's something you need to have to progress. It's just another attribute that you need for motorsport the way it currently is.
Well, Callan, you're fast becoming a WA sporting asset of your own into the Formula 2s. From the Formula 3s, we know that the F1s are on the horizon. You're a well-spoken young man. You're representing yourself and your family and, of course, Triton Motorsport with a great deal of distinction. Thanks for joining us on Sports Day. Best of luck in the Formula 2 season.
Yeah, thank you so much. Great to speak to you.
There it is, Callan Williams joining us for our friends, the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. It's as silent as the critics. Find out more at kia.com/au. More of Sports Day coming your way shortly.
Sports Day for Kia, the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6.
And 2022 Western Force memberships available now at westernforce.rugby.
Thanks for your company on Sports Day as we talk golf with our main man, Mark Allen, from the Twilight Zone on sister station 3AW, of course, a former golf pro. Marco, thanks for your company.
Skeetons, Gary, pleasure. And didn't we see some performing this weekend? Incredible what Jed Morgan did. I mean, honestly, you don't see golf like that very often. To win by close to 10 shots, I think he had an 11-shot lead at one stage, and to do it so easily, to do it with strength and repetition. If you're an old golfer watching that sort of stuff, it was reminiscent of Peter Senior, Greg Norman, Robert Allenby when he was king of the world. This kid can play.
Well, the Eagles used to sing about the new kid in town in golfing parlance. Is that Jed Morgan? Is he the new hot thing, or is this going to be a one-off? Is it one of those just remarkable performances that is hard to repeat?
That's not a silly question, because we've seen it before, and it's a really good question. But this kid, the way he swings the club, it's a 10 out of 10, the way he swings. The way he putts, it's a 10 out of 10. The most important thing here, the way this kid thinks, is a 10 out of 10. So you've got driving, his swing, his putting, and the way he thought through the weekend. I mean, it's only his fourth tournament. It's the oldest trophy that we play for in the country, and it was worth $180,000, money this kid has not seen. The way he thought through the weekend and delivered, I think he's special.
That's a big wrap there, Mark. Very good. Will Schofield here, mate. What about the girls? What's happening in women's golf at the moment?
Well, look, I'll tell you what, this tournament this week, because so many of our Australians are overseas, they found room for the girls, and it was great. The WPGA was won by Suo. Grace Kim just turned pro recently, showed her class. Only 24 in that field. I think a couple might have been lost because of COVID. So maybe just 22. But still, the golf was brilliant to watch. And did you see the crowds? The crowds at Royal Queensland were sensational. I mean, that's what it's all about. Early January, a lot of people on holidays, plenty out watching the golf. There's a real curiosity factor when the girls and guys are playing together. I think you need two courses to get two full fields to do it properly. But this week was perfect. You know, to see, I think there's 144 players, which is a full field in a professional event. You can get up to 156, but 144 were there. It's well worth it. And, you know, they were playing a golf course set up for the fellas too. So the golf that they played was pretty flash.
Mark, is that the way forward for many tournaments, males and females, and being able to integrate? I know it's difficulty with the courses, et cetera, but it's proving popular with fans by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it is. Look, here's the negatives. Like, the positives are what we saw on the weekend. The curiosity factor, guys and girls together, governments love that stuff, and so do sponsors. They're the positives. The negatives is that if you only play one golf course, then you've got half fields. And I can remember, I'm going back to my professional career and the kids that I came through with when they first turned pro. A lot of the time, it's that tournament you only just sneak into, or the tournament that you qualify for. And you stick four good rounds together and you make your $40,000, you become exempt and you're off and going. I think if we do mixed fields on one course, you're going to lose a lot of that. I don't think it's worth it, personally, because I want to see as many good Australians, men and women, right across all the tours in the world. So the only way you can do it, really, is the way they do it at the Victorian Open, where there's two golf courses. And that way you can get 120 and 120. Even then, it's not a full field. You want 144 and 144 playing in a women's tournament and a men's tournament. And, you know, in the old days, the Australian Open used to be 156. In opens, you know, the British Open, the US Open, 156. So the thinking behind it is we want everyone playing. We don't want one person to miss out because the talent runs so deep. So, you know, the kid's first emergency. Yeah, here's a great example. John Daly, 1991, US PGA Championship. He was the sixth or seventh emergency, came on one by four shots. So you eliminate that sort of thing happening. I don't want to see that go for the game. So I don't think it's the way forward for all tournaments, but I reckon you could do it one in 20. One in 20 events around the world, it works well.
Mark, what's the general depth in Australian golf right now? You talk about players making the step from amateurs to pros, and whether or not, you know, it's by chance or whatever. What's the depth looking like across Australia?
The depth has always been good, really good. You know, I watch the golf swings and the men's and ladies tour on Saturday arvos and Sunday arvos and Friday and Thursday nights, and I see what's out there. Our kids are very good. They're really, really good. Here's the thing. We've been starved of opportunity because we live so far away from headquarters as far as golf's concerned. The Northern Hemisphere in America and Europe, that is headquarters. Japan, you know, is a third place getter. It's hard. And our Australian peso, once you get over there, lasts about 3 minutes. It doesn't go very well. So once upon a time, you know, I'm going to cut through it, but this is a very good story, so bear with me. Once upon a time, the pathways from the Australian Tour were enormous. I'll give you an example. I finished 13th on the Order of Merit 1 year and got all the way through to the very last stage of the US Tour School and got myself, it was called the Nike Tour back then, I got myself a Nike Tour card. That's a pathway. And that gave someone like me a real opportunity overseas. Those pathways have dried up. But I can tell you, this week, there have been enormous announcements from the PGA of Australia, some really good ones. Not the top Order of Merit winner. The top three Order of Merit winners are going to start getting European Tour cards, and that's sliding top three. So if the first three have already got a European card, then four, five, and six can get that European Tour card, that's huge. We're going to start seeing players five into a lot of the Asian World Tour events. So the European Tour is now called the DP World Tour. About time for that name change. So that's enormous as well. So we're starting to see these beautiful little pathways starting to open up because of the talks that the PGA of Australia have been having with the DP World Tour, and the US Tour is in the background. Hopefully, now fingers crossed, boys, tournaments like the WA Open, the WA PGA, the Queensland PGA that they're playing this week, hopefully they become part of the Challenge Tour on the World Tour, the DP World Tour. That's the secondary. That's like the Corn Ferry Tour over in the PGA Tour. Lots of tours here. Can you keep up? So that would be incredible if that could happen. So that's, look, that's down the track. But if we can open up pathways for our young talent, you're going to see an overwhelming number of Australian flags on leaderboards right around the world.
Well, you mentioned Japan in that summary there, Mark. Well, Hideki Matsuyama is, well, he's becoming bigger than Ben-Hur in his own country, of course, but tell us what the scope of improvement or where he could end up.
Oh, well, look, he's the Masters champ. What he did in Hawaii, you know, he was five shots down with nine holes to play in Hawaii. He chased down Henley. Henley parred the last, and he did something special off the tee and got there and two-putted for birdie. Gets into a playoff. He hit a drive with a three-wood just because Henley hit one in the trap. He had 277 yards into the sun and hit a three-wood to under 3 feet. It's one of the best shots we've ever seen in that situation. Yeah. This bloke seems to do it a lot because at the Zozo Championship, which is a World Golf Tour event in his home country, Japan, I think he was tied for the lead coming in the last, and he ended up hitting a 5-wood to about 10 feet. So he's the king of the fairway wood at the moment. He's only 29 years old. I feel like he's 49. He's been around for so long. But you're starting to look at his record now. He's a very, very flash player. And what we saw there, just nerves of steel. So if you're lucky enough to watch the Hawaii playoff, it was something special. Hideki's a special player.
Yeah, well, you're a very flash golfing correspondent yourself, Mark Allen. Thanks for your company, as always. Very enlightening on the world of golf and what's happening everywhere. Thanks for being part of Sports Day again.
I want you to brush up on your tours all around the world. I'll give you a pop quiz next week.
And taking notes.
We'll go studying. Good on you, Marco. Mark Allen from the Twilight Zone on our sister station 3AW. Stay with us. More of Sports Day up next.
Sports Day for Kia. The super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6.
And 2022 Western Force memberships available now at westernforce.rugby.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Thanks for your company on this Wednesday night and to all our special guests. Before we wrap it up, Will Schofield, there's some big sporting names that are caught up in a COVID trap potentially heading our way earlier this year.
Well, for everyone playing along at home that loves playing the who's not vaccinated, the COVID game, we've had the Novak Djokovic saga. Well, surfing's about to cop the same deal. Kelly Slater, the best of all time, the best to ever do it, he's unvaccinated. I believe that's confirmed. The federal sports minister, Richard Colbeck, says, and I quote, "No chance of getting into the country if he's not vaccinated." And the number one in the world, Gabriel Medina, is also, we haven't had confirmation. It hasn't had a confirmation either. So we're just not quite sure with him. So potentially the number one surfer in the world and the greatest of all time will not make the trip to do the Bells Beach Rip Curl Pro, or here in Western Australia, the Margaret River Pro. So they would be the two biggest draw cards for surfing. Don't know if you love surfing or not, but that's huge for that sport and incredibly disappointing, I think, that we're not going to be able to see them if that's the case.
Absolutely. And on the COVID front, we know that William Pike has decided to up stumps and head from WA to New South Wales. Well, unfortunately, because the heat today in Perth, Belmont meeting was postponed, put on ice, and Saturday, 39 degrees. So he mightn't be riding in WA for the next couple of meetings, pending the weather. And of course, he might be heading to New South Wales, we think, in the next few weeks. So William Pike, a massive loss for WA Racing. Thanks to all our special guests tonight. Callum Williams, a new Formula 2 driver. Matty Hodgson from the Western Force. Scott Morrison, the coach of the Perth Wildcats. Not forgetting Luke Shuey, West Coast Eagles captain. And WACA CEO Christina Matthews. We're here for Toolkit Depot, Top Brands Ultimate Range Pro Service. Up next, we've got the night shift, 133-882. Join Will Schofield and myself tomorrow night from 6 o'clock on 6PR.